It was 20 years ago. You hadn't promoted yourself to general yet. You were just a petty drug lord. You and your gang of murderers gathered your small ounce of courage to raid across the border for food, weapons, slave labor. My father was the village magistrate. A simple man with a simple code, justice. He gathered the few people that he could to stand against you. You and your bullies were driven back by farmers with pitchforks. My father saved his village at the cost of his own life. You had him shot as you ran away. A hero at a thousand paces.
I'm sorry. I don't remember any of it.
You don't remember?
For you, the day Bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
Hey everybody, welcome to This Week in Mormons. I'm your host Jeff. I'm joined by the other host Al, who currently has granola in his face and is unable to
I'm the other host. My name is Al.
There we go. He's here. So thanks for joining us as we talk about Mormon.
Jeff's the other host besides me. We have two hosts.
Hold on, I want to check your math on that. Yep. I got the same thing. Absolutely one of my favorite lines in The Social Network. I love that part. Cracks me up every time. So funny.
Yep. That's Zuckerberg. What a clever, witty guy he must have been.
I don't think Zuckerberg is that clever and witty of a guy. I think the Aaron Sorkin, the screenwriter of The Social Network, also the creator of The West Wing. So you can
Great
see,
show.
Can see where the bantering comes from. I think that's where Aaron Sorkin won an Oscar for his screenplay for The Social Network. So, yes. Oh, yes.
They said, you made Mark Zuckerberg interesting. Give that man an award.
Because you watch The Real Zuckerberg and you're kind of like, oh, you're not as compelling as other people I've talked to. But
you're thinking of Jesse Eisenberg.
Yes, but Jesse Eisenberg almost plays the same character in every movie he's in. I mean, if you compare his Lex Luthor in Batman v Superman to his Mark Zuckerberg, they're actually pretty similar characters.
I don't know if that says more about Mark Zuckerberg or more about Jesse Eisenberg.
Also a fair point. Is Mark Zuckerberg Lex Luthor? Luthor, however you want. I don't know.
Luthus.
All I know is the Justice League movie is coming out this year as DC desperately tries to catch up to Marvel in the cinematic universe world, and I probably won't be seeing it. That's
what? That doesn't sound like you. You see everything. You have such low standards for your cinema intake.
That is a lie, and that's a bald-faced lie. How dare you?
Hold on, Jeff. Have you seen La La Land?
Yeah, and you've seen it three times.
That's true. I loved it. What a great show. I listen to the soundtrack every morning for my shower.
A great movie that I finally watched this week, and I meant to for a little while. Did you ever see Sing Street? Alan?
Sing Street? Is it an animated?
Sing Street. No, it's an Irish film. I remember it being very well reviewed when it came out last year. Never saw it. It's on Netflix right now in the U.S. And that is a good show. I think you'd enjoy
Sing
it.
Sing Street.
Yes. Good
what
flick.
What do they sing?
They sing, but not in a musical sense, like spontaneously in the song. It's about some kids who start a band in Ireland.
This film takes us back to 1980s Dublin, as seen through the eyes of a 14-year-old pervert named Connor. He's looking for a break from a home strained by his parents' relationships and money troubles. This is your life. This is autobiographical.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. It was really good, and the songs in it were awesome. There's some sweet songs in that movie. I very much enjoyed it.
Well, yeah. Jeff, what a glowing recommendation. I've written that down. Al C. Sing Street.
usually my recommendations are gold. Like, did you happen to listen to the Martin Short autobiography?
I did. Delightful.
And what did you think?
Delightful. It was no Born Standing Up Steve Martin biography, but
of course not.
Still very well done.
Of course not. I mean, Martin Short
and,
is on a...
And I love that it was narrated by him.
It's just like Ronald Reagan's autobiography, also narrated by Ronald Reagan. That'll have you believing in supply-side economics, even if you're a communist. You might have been a Bernie Sanders voter, and by the end, the old Gipper will have you ready to supply
I never doubted supply-side economics.
He's very convincing when he's speaking on his own. Well, go figure.
Jeff, it's been like 9 months. How are you? Are you well?
I know, man. We've been busy. I mean, we keep in touch and stuff, even though we're not recording as frequently. But it's been busier for both of us lately. I'm super. Stuff's humming along. I don't know. My work is going well.
I'm the busy jobless guy I've ever met. That came out wrong. I am the most busy jobless guy. I have calendar events. Like last night, meetings went till 10 p.m.
Are you using your Google Calendar again? Because I used to use that to schedule things with you, and you never check it.
Yeah, no. Now that I have no official position, I use it like crazy.
So I can go back to adding events because we share a TWIM calendar. I will go back and start adding things on there so that you.
Yeah, do it. Do it retroactively, please. I hope to have all of 2015 updated. Thank you.
Sure. I'll do that. I'm going to put random things in there, like write the article you said you're going to write for the past 3 years.
No, you'll legit screw up my schedule if all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I've got a 3-hour block here. What is going on? I'm like, oh.
And it just says, Jeff says, marathon discussion on dress and grooming standards? What? What?
We need to write a book, Jeff. That's what we'll do with our 3-hour blocks.
We actually need to write the book. I guess we're outing ourselves because we've been talking about it, but we need to.
We've had dreams, people. We have books to write.
Here's the thing, folks.
I want it to be this dystopian novel that's sort of set in Nephite times.
Right, right.
Where there's a naive young Nephite who doesn't realize the intricacies of war.
And he wears tennis shoes, yes?
And he goes wandering around making friends with.
Yes.
Bad guys like Korihor.
And Jacob.
And there will be no Messiah.
All right. Good deal. So instead of doing what we were going to do, which was supposed to be autobiographical and commentary, instead we'll convert it into a dystopian Nephite work of fiction.
Yeah, imagine
Nephite dystopia.
Imagine it's the second wave of Nephite. So this is another 1,000 years in the future, and you have the same... You have the same group that leaves the Mulekites, comes over early, they set up shop, murder everybody, die.
Right,
and then
sure.
You have a second group that leaves the Trump administration and goes to, I don't know where they go to, Greenland? Where do you sail to from here?
We know that Ireland offered an island for U.S. refugees. Oh, freely.
Did they?
Yes.
That's very sweet of them. So we go to this Ireland island.
Yes.
That's funny to say. And we'll have
a Dalmatian plantation. Yeah.
And then it all starts over. I think that's great. And then we have our own Haygoth.
Sure.
I mean, all the great characters. Tiancum.
I have always loved the chapter with Haygoth because they're like, well, he sailed off and we just assume he died because we never heard from him again. Or he found a better life without you people and built a civilization somewhere. You just all think he just died. Well, yeah. You know, he didn't send a postcard, so it's
thanks,
over.
Debbie Downer.
Whoop, whoop.
What a bummer. What is that? Alma 63? Is that the last chapter? What a bummer that is. Come on, Alma. I sit there.
Horrid writing, which is why he's so negative in the rest of his chapters.
I suffer through 20 chapters of war. I don't know how much blood can be in the River Sidon, but I'm going to admit, when I was younger, I thought it was more compelling than I do now.
All the wars?
I used to love the war chapters because they were kind of like fun to read when you're younger. As I've gotten older,
than the Jesus-y stuff, and now we're like, we just want to feel peace in our life.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as I've gotten older, there are spiritual nuggets. Of course, you learn a lot of interesting things in the war chapters. You know, especially when Moroni is angry with the government, and then finds out the government's like, "No, man, it's been a mess over here. We got you." And they're like, "Ah, man, I'm sorry. Let's be bros again." And
Moroni's
like,
"Moroni
cool,
never
dog.
Said let's be bros. He just pretended it didn't happen." He beat him up, and then he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa,
very similar to our day. Moroni levied accusations against the government and said,
Moroni
you
was
did
like,
this to
they,
me.
They wiretapped me.
And then the government's like, no, man, this never happened. And then Moroni's like, oh, it's cool. I never said that. Don't worry about it.
This is devastating. This is why to my rhetoric for what the my narrative of the Book of Mormon in my mind. It was Moroni was he could never be a Trump character. This was never that was
this
never him.
Is why
he did say whatever he wanted.
It's written for our day, Al. This is what they've said. I challenge everyone now to read the Book of Mormon and look for Trumpisms. They've got to be
was
everywhere.
Written for our if Moroni turns out to be the bad guy, I will never forgive you, Jeff. You'll have
I don't believe Moroni is the bad guy.
You haven't read it yet. You don't know.
I went my whole mission in all these years. Never read it. I don't even know what happens.
It's going to be a fascinating read.
I get bored after Fourth Nephi. And then I'm just like, well, what now? What now? They were so good, and now they're bad again. Where could this possibly go that would be compelling?
Yeah, so you read the... all right. You read the Moroni part then, or the Mormon. Is
that
it Mormon?
One. I do prefer...
Who's an Alma?
I prefer the other Moroni more than Captain Moroni.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, Moroni 7, epic chapter of Scripture. And what I love about, to be on a serious note, what I love about the Book of Moroni is that, of course, it's Moroni at that point by himself, and he's been a bridging plates. His dad's dead at this point, Mormon. And the Book of Moroni starts basically like, well, kind of thought I'd be dead by now, but I've got a little bit of extra time, so let me write about some other extra stuff. And you've got a couple brief chapters where he talks about things like the sacrament and
He's like, don't baptize babies.
Yeah, and then he's like, all right. Then he has more time for some nuggets with the later chapters. Basically,
it's just an old guy picking things apart. He's like, listen, if they're not killing me yet, you know what else is terrible? The Bears. They're the worst. Worst team in the NFL. Why do those guys even exist?
Bears like, are, don't. But unless you are the prophet Elisha, in which case bears are your best friend if children make fun of your baldness.
Because freaking she-bears, man.
You send the bears on them. You say, get it done.
Yeah. Don't. No, but... But it is a little cantankerous in those.
Why don't they mention that in General Conference? Like when they talk about not respecting the leaders of the church, not believing and following the prophet, why don't they say, remember what happened to the kids with Elisha, folks? All right. You know,
I could feel like an Elder Oaks might do that and wink at the camera.
Or a Bednar. We could see an Oaks or a Bednar. Bust that one out. Nelson might do it, but then he'd get that grin on his face when he's very pleased with himself for the joke he just told.
Oh, I do like that.
I know you do. Scriptures are fun.
Life
is well,
huh?
I have been enjoying Doctrine and Covenants more, though. Teaching gospel doctrine now. Very enlightening because I'm really getting into all this church history and learning more about sections of Doctrine and Covenants, which has been quite illuminating and enjoyable. So
How so?
I wouldn't say I've been much of a church history scholar in my life. I've tried to learn more as time goes on here and there. The stuff I appreciate. So, but being forced to teach it, like they often say, it's cliche, but when you teach gospel doctrine, you typically as the teacher, you get more out of it than anybody else because you spend
all
this time preparing.
Isn't that true?
So I don't know. I mean, I've just learned a lot of good stuff. Like this past week, I taught all about Section 20, the organization of the church. And there's all kinds of historical stuff I wasn't super up on before that. And it's been useful. I read that, you get all the new materials that the church is offering now. They've put in the lessons.
That's the sacrament, right?
Section 20 has a lot of things. It's the constitution of the church, as we say.
No, isn't it?
It talks about the church history, the importance of the Book of Mormon, the way they organize the church. There's mention of the sacrament. There's also the rundown of priesthood offices.
I think I'm thinking maybe of Section 24, 26. There's another one where they just like, it's just like Adam on the Almond, a sacrament meeting there. Who's all going to be there? Quite nice.
Yeah. So anyway, it's been good. I'm enjoying that. I finished Rough Stone Rolling. Very proud of myself. We talked about that last time.
Did you listen to it on the Deseret Book free audio library they have going on?
No, sir. I read it cover to cover during my commute.
You read paper pages, Jeff. Wow.
I did. Very dense book. It was enjoyable, though.
I'm trying to read 1984 right now. I find it supremely boring.
Oh, come on. Isn't there an Orwellian in All of Us? You got to start looking. Come on, buddy.
No, I had the book, and I could never get excited about reading the book, and so I got the audio book, and there's some British guy reading it that it's hard to understand. It's such, like, dense.
It's like what I don't do well with audio books that are fiction. I struggle, like, to retain the information. It's kind of weird. One time, my wife and I were road tripping, years ago, and I think we listened to The Great Gatsby on audiobook because the movie was the DiCaprio movie was going to be coming.
Oh, I've heard of DiCaprio, yeah.
And I hadn't read The Great Gatsby in years or anything, so we listened to the audiobook, figured it would make for the good road trip drive, and it was narrated by Jake Gyllenhaal for reasons beyond understanding.
these times have been hard on all of us, Jeff.
And I'll sit there, and I don't know if it's because I was driving, so I'm thinking about the road or I don't know what. But all the time, and I've done this many times, I go to my wife like, wait, what happened? Can you explain this scene to me? What did I miss? Like, I do not internalize stuff from fictional audiobooks. If it's matter of fact or biographical, like I listened to Tina Fey's Bossy Pants on audiobook, the whole thing, I got it all. It was great. But
see, driving, I'm great with audio. Like, that's where all my podcasts, all my books happen. It's when I'm sitting at home trying to listen through stuff lazily, can't. No way. No. Not a chance.
Depends on what. I've gotten very into the podcast Pod Save America. Quite enjoyable.
What is it?
Pod Save America. Now, I will issue a disclaimer on this. It's a podcast done by a number of former Obama staffers, who, of course, now don't have jobs. Anyway, so... If you cannot at least be entertained by a very obviously liberal perspective on things, then you would not enjoy it, okay? But if you're at least more moderate and can just listen to stuff and be like, well, they got their point of view and it's fine, it's actually very entertaining and really interesting because they can talk really candidly about, like, stuff working with Obama. One of them was one of Obama's main speechwriters, and they're talking all about the experiences of that. They get pretty cool guests on. Downside is they like to swear a fair bit, but...
Hey, when you're in D.C., Jeff, you're part of them.
They're all in San Francisco now. They fled for the true motherland. They said, let's get out of this liberal town and go to the other one across the way.
There's only two.
Yeah. But anyway, and there's a related podcast called Pod Save the World, where it's a guy who was on the National Security Council, also in the Obama administration, but they talk all about foreign affairs. It's been pretty interesting.
It's kind of cool to live in an age where, like, that's a possibility, right? Like, 10 years ago, all they could do is write a book.
Well, for example, they had a guy on who was on the National Security Council, another guest with President Obama. And this guy was actually widely tipped to probably run the council if Hillary would have won, but that didn't happen. But he talks all about the Iran deal. And I don't care about the politics of the Iran deal right now, but he talks about the experience of setting that up. And that is fascinating because we don't have formal diplomatic relations with Iran. He's like, I just flew on coach by myself, couldn't tell anybody where I was going. And I went to Oman and I go in this room and, like, I come in one door and an Iranian delegation comes in the other. They were instructed not to shake hands with me. And, like, you learn all about this back end stuff that happens way in advance to try to set things up. And it's really interesting. Pretty fascinating.
They're like, we just need one plane full of money. And,
obviously, I've never been shy about my opinions of the Trump administration or anything, so I don't mind podcasts that openly denigrate and wonder what the heck is going on. So that's fair. But all that aside, it's an interesting listen. So there you go. Anyway, all this time, is life good? Everything good for you? You're happy? You're unemployed?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, thanks. Great. You didn't have to ask. That's very kind.
I love you. I love asking.
How are you? Is everything good? Are you fine? Okay.
Yeah, you know. Everything's good. Okay, cool. All right.
No, yeah. Life is good, man. Life is really good.
Yeah.
I'm moving out of my apartment soon, and all the excitement that comes around that.
Is that because Steve Solberg is the worst, and he finally got to you?
Whoa, whoa, whoa! Steve Solberg has a great special coming out on VidAngel soon.
Oh, he's doing one of their originals, huh?
Oh, he sure is. He sure is. Now, this is interesting because VidAngel is trying desperately to stay relevant, and I went and saw their Tim Timmerman movie. Do you know it was the worst.
I saw was it just like a comedy or just a comedy movie?
I think they thought it was a comedy, but it was not a comedy. It was awful. I want so badly for them to find some reason to exist. And their comedy stuff they're doing. So they opened up the Dry Bar down in Provo. They just turned their headquarters into a comedy club.
That was actually their functional headquarters, and they converted part of it into a comedy club.
I think so. I'm not 100% positive, but they had this building, and then they turned it into a comedy club and start. I think the intent was to buy the building and start doing original works there. Like this comedy stuff, but then they ended up, like, only needing it for comedy stuff.
And you think that's been the plan? And that's very interesting, because I'm sure they planned this stuff well in advance before their legal troubles that they've been in. You know, I mean, it's obvious they weren't saying we're just going to be a service that offers filtered movies. They've wanted to do other things, which is ambitious. But now,
well, I actually suspect that they were. They knew that, from day one, they were gearing up for this event, right? They knew this was coming. Yeah. There's all kinds of, legal stuff still going on where I think we might have even talked about it last time, but one of them was the ruling, the judge said, no, the family, whatever it's called, the Family Movie Act or whatever.
Right.
Said, no, the right way for that to be used is in this other way. Like how Google will let you filter them, realizing that they had previously banned that as well. And so then it was one of those things where we've left you no way to filter movies. So now we need to go back to the drawing board and we'll figure out what we actually meant here. And so there's a chance that they'll get it back. I would love to get that service back. I care about that. I do not care as much about their original stuff, but the comedy... I mean, it's interesting because out there right now, there's Netflix doing comedy specials for Chappelle getting tens of millions of dollars to go and do
right,
one. But there's nobody that's sort of seeding the Comedy Central-esque specials. And Comedy Central is focused more on the edgy comedy. And so
clean
if you're,
comedy. Well, no, Brian no. Regan, everybody. Brian Regan for
no,
days.
No, if you're a clean comic, there's nowhere for you to surface your stuff. So I actually think there's a niche to be filled there.
Well, what I find funny about VidAngel is... In this sense, are they not competing in, I guess not comedy, but if they want to get into to be a production company for clean content, doesn't that kind of run up against BYU TV? Because BYU TV has been trying to get away from Mormon-specific programming into just broader, wholesome programming, and they've been very successful with it.
Yeah,
so
is
VidAngel just going after a market that BYU TV is already aggressively pursuing and has the means to pursue?
Oh, BYU TV is certainly going after the very same market, but BYU TV's capacity is what? Three shows, four shows a season?
I don't
season?
Know. All I know is Relative Race started again this week, and my life has never been better.
What is Relative Race?
It was clearly inspired by The Amazing Race, but the rules are fantastically more convoluted. So the idea behind it is it's only four teams, and they run around and have to do stuff, but it's sponsored by Ancestry.
Is it like a scavenger hunt?
No, well, sometimes. It's sponsored by Ancestry, and the idea is instead of on these legs they go on, they have to drive to certain destinations, and in the end of each leg, they actually meet one of their relatives. So I think everybody does those Ancestry DNA tests.
Oh, yeah, I did one of those.
And then they set them up to meet one of their relatives, which might be somebody sort of close, and it might be some random, fourth cousin X times removed or what have you. So that's part of the fun of it is they get to go around and they drive across the country while they're racing, so to speak, and meet their families. And it's mostly enjoyable. I like it for what it is, but I also watch it with a little bit of Schadenfreude in a way, in that the host, Dan, is great, but there are so many scenes that crack me up because they have to do a lot of weird things. Like when they get to the city they're supposed to go to, they have to send him a picture from their phones. Oh, and they're not allowed to have any toys like smartphones or GPS. They have to use regular maps to get around.
Whoa.
But they have a little flip phone and they'll take a picture of where they're at. And when they show him, quote unquote, receive the picture, he's always like, oh yeah, yeah, that's a sign for the city, all right. It's hard to explain.
Let me ask you this, Jeff. If they invited you on, if they had tryouts and you could try out, would you go?
1,000%. My wife and I would kill it. We would crush this whole thing.
You'd meet so many people.
Half the mistakes they're making, I'm like, why? Why are you doing this? This is a silly way to go. Everyone goes to gas stations looking for directions. No, folks, you go to a pizza place. You always go to a pizza place because a Domino's has a sign of the area, and they'll tell you exactly where the street is that you're looking for.
Oh, genius.
Every time.
Yeah, the person at the gas station, they don't care. They say, I don't know where the streets are
just because they're in a gas station. It's silly. So... it's reasonably enjoyable. It does have very weird rules because it's not a race where they're all going to the same place and coming in a certain position because they're visiting different relatives.
So how do you win? If my relatives are in Maine and yours are in Las Vegas, I feel you'd win.
They try to keep them all in the same sort of general vicinity. At least last season, they branched out a lot. They started in L.A. and they kind of wound their way around the West and across the country. So they're sort of in the same kind of general vicinity, sometimes by separated by hundreds of miles in different areas or states, but sure, going in the same direction, so to speak. So the way they do it is they say, you have to go to this destination. You have so much allotted time based on however they've calculated, probably from Google Maps, how long it takes to drive from where they're starting to where they're going, plus complete some of the tasks assigned to them in the process. And the idea is they have to find their relative and take a selfie with them and send it to the host, and then he stops the clock. And so whoever gets a strike...
So the host is just he's just sitting at home playing Xbox and then pervertly saying, oh, that looks like a nice...
The host is in, quote-unquote, the production company's offices, which this time, for some reason, they were in New York last year because the show ended in New York, and now he's in Boston. So apparently the production company just moves offices arbitrarily with wherever he has
naturally
to go. So he's just sitting in his office... looks at their selfies and then hits his iMac.
That seems like an easy job for a host.
Yeah,
your job is to keep an Excel spreadsheet and look at your phone.
And then he has a video conference brought to you by GoToMeeting with all four teams at the end. And so he compares their actual time it took to carry out the race and the alarm.
Are there any visual? This is really stupid line of discussion.
So they go in there a lot of time, and then whoever exceeds...
I'm realizing we've been talking about this for minutes now.
I know.
And how stupid this is.
Whoever exceeds their time the worst gets the ding for that episode. And if you get three dings, three strikes, you're off the race.
Ding, 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 they say. Ding, ding, ding.
So it's kind of a race, but kind of not. It's like time trials more than like a race in the same way. So that's related to Mormons because it has a Mormon host and they had Mormons on it last season. But this season, based on the short shorts these girls are wearing, I don't think garments are involved. So clearly.
Whoa. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What's this show called? Roots Race?
Relative Race.
Relative?
It's on the you can Chromecast it if you have the BYU TV app, people. Just Chromecast
it. It's a relative race. There's two entendres there, if you noticed.
Yeah, see, that's what they're going. I don't even think they were going for that. I think they were really just trying to say it's a race for your relatives, not realizing
that like,
it could be interpreted.
And then they're like, whoa, it's like sort of a race.
It's sort of not a race.
I get
it. Sort of is.
Aren't
there any
now.
Other fans of the show out there? Twim Nation, respond to me and tell me if you know about this program. Am I the only one?
No, I can't imagine there are.
Come on. It's way better than whatever that show is that you were on, Al. What?
Turning Point.
Turning Point.
The greatest show of our generation, as I call it. All right, let's see. There's Jeff, what do you think of John Huntsman being Russian ambassador?
I'm cool with it. I can't figure out if it's an insult, like saying, hey, because Huntsman spoke
Wasn't
badly
he ambassador to China before because he speaks Chinese?
He was ambassador to China under Obama.
Why do you send the guy that speaks Chinese to Russia?
That's why I think it's punishment. Huntsman spoke poorly of Trump throughout the campaign. And now Trump's like, well, guess what, sucker? Go to the gulag. Have fun.
Why would he accept?
Because if you're offered an ambassadorship, especially to a very high-profile country, you don't say no.
Is that true? I feel like I would still be like, I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. What'll be curious, though, is that Huntsman, I think, does not share Trump's views on Russia. So I don't know how that's going to play out. Or Tillerson's views on Russia, for that matter. So I don't know what'll happen.
What are Rex Tillerson's views on Russia?
Well, he's pretty pro-business, and he's got a long history of being cozy with Putin. So far, he hasn't done really much of anything involving Russia as Secretary of State.
How can you stand Putin?
Because if you're a business person, and this is not... I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush and just say business doesn't care about right or wrong or anything like that.
I feel like that's exactly what you're doing.
But he's a businessman, and his goal and his job as CEO of ExxonMobil was to try to retain access to a lucrative market. So he was doing what he had to do. He wasn't caring about like how messed up it was that Russia illegally annexed Crimea. He just cares about trying to expand his company and keep the stock price high.
What
right?
I mean, that's his job. Son of a gun.
We'll see what happens with all these
monsters,
people.
All of them.
What do you think about Huntsman being called and sustained as ambassador to Russia?
I just can't imagine saying yes. I can't. I have such a hard time thinking that that like you would get anything good out of this assignment.
Is that because it's Russia or because it's with President Trump?
Partly both with an L. I think serving in any foreign country right now, under the Trump administration, sort of representing those policies.
Yes and no, though. There are no policies. Difficult. That's the thing is, there are no policies.
What happened was,
usually there's a grace period, because ambassadors are political appointees, you oftentimes for high-profile ones, to donors and, you know, favors, and low-profile ones go to, like...
Yeah, Shirley Temple is who I think of.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So, but Trump did something unusual, in that usually there's a grace period, especially if it's a change of party in the executive. Usually there's a grace period to say, well, you know, we're going to appoint another ambassador, but obviously you have some time to close things down here while we get the other one put in, because you want to have continuity. Trump instead said there's no grace period, you're all done on January 20th.
He fired all ambassadors.
At least the ones, I assuming, who were Obama appointees. And so there's actually been a bit of a vacuum on the ambassador front for the past 6 weeks. And on top of that, the State Department is a bit rudderless right now, according to many reports. Tillerson hasn't really adopted any kind of a real strategy or vision for the agency.
Sometimes you can rush into strategy and vision.
That is true.
You don't want to overplan these things.
He's been sidelined by Trump as well. He's not involved in much stuff. It's pretty clear Trump doesn't have a lot of regard for the State Department. And so most of the stuff I've read has shown that the State Department's still just kind of taking their old marching orders from stuff from Obama and Kerry, because nothing new has come along. So they're just kind of trying to keep going, because that's all they don't have anything new to work with. It's very interesting.
If you're transitioning a business, I feel like this would have to be rated a very difficult time. This would not be anybody's favorite transition.
I know, right?
What's awesome is it sets it up great for the next guy. The next guy that comes in, he just has to not be terrible, and people are going to be like, he's the best.
Well, President Pence is going to do a great job when he assumes office within about 9 months, so it's
going to be I want to run for president now, because I could step in there, and they'd be like, Al, you're amazing. And I'd be like, I know.
By the way, not Mormon-related, but if anybody watches the show The Last Man on Earth, which I'm a big fan of, they had a hilarious... they basically killed off the entire Trump cabinet as a joke. It was hilarious.
The Secret Service should look into that.
Well, no, not. It takes place in the future when a virus has wiped out a bunch of America, and one episode goes into the past, and they don't even mention Trump, but they talk about President Pence succumbing to the virus, so it seems that who knows what happened to Trump. And then they quickly show a montage where they show a bunch of funerals, and it's like, President Tillerson, President so-and-so, and they work their way all the down, and then the screen says, President DeVos laid to rest. It was just funny. It was funny.
As a nod to Battlestar Galactica, where the Secretary of Education actually took her. I love it.
Yes.
I love it.
Let's see here. So anyway, Huntsman, do we have any other, Any other
What about throwing chickens in Rexburg? This was
all the better, Al.
This was lovely. An apartment of women in Rexburg, Idaho, BYU, Idaho, had a chicken with a note thrown in, a live chicken. I believe it's live. Yeah, a live chicken thrown in with a note that says, screw you, Kyler. Now, plot twist, Kyler doesn't live there. They don't know who Kyler is. And it was a woman that threw it in there and then ran off. So there's somebody stole somebody's boyfriend.
There's some kind of single white female.
And the appropriate response was finding a live chicken, tying a note to its foot that said, screw you, and throwing it in their house.
Great comment, by the way, at the bottom. Flipping her the bird would have been more effective.
Ayo.
Darn these chickens. I don't know what's going on in Rexburg, Al. They need hobbies.
Hey, once it comes to poultry, you know you've damaged something.
It's like there's nothing to do there because they got rid of everything. The kids, it's either...
this is just a product of boredom. People are like, let's go find chickens.
It's chickens are the dooms, man. That's it. You got nothing else. I mean, the Tetons aren't that far, but let's be honest, people. Nobody drives out there. Why would you do that?
Useless. The Tetons are delightful.
Speaking of BYU schools losing sports, Al, your alma mater no longer has a basketball team, if I'm not mistaken.
I know. We had our last game. It was very sad. They sang Aloha Oi to the sports program.
And so that's the whole thing, right? Not just basketball. Is this the end of all sports?
All sports. They went the way of BYU-Idaho. Now, this is interesting because I'm not sure what the motivation is, but there's a lot of lobbying from the school level up saying, No. This is bringing people into the church. It's a great, you know, way to reach out into our community and drive value. Like, the whole community comes out for the games. But instead, they're just going to be a leech on the community and drive no value back into them with any forms of entertainment.
They've got the PCC, my friend, the most attended paid tourist attraction in Hawaii. I remember how they advertise it.
It's important that it's paid, yeah. Yes, they do. Not owned by the school, though.
Yeah, but it's owned by the church, and it's staffed by students. I mean, come on. They're not a bunch of louts. They're
all right. So you got some of that, and then you got some pretty, you know, you got some mediocre play productions over there. Not mediocre.
And then you've got that new Courtyard Marriott right across the street. I mean, that's doing good business too.
Hey, they're doing stuff there. No, yeah. So anyway, BYU Hawaii, aloha oi.
I'm sorry about that, Al. I feel like it is in many ways unfair, just because of course sports continue in Provo. Because, and let's face it, BYU Provo competes at whatever, you know, tier level that actually results in something.
They compete at a kindergarten level. Have you seen them in any tournament lately do well? No, they are not.
I've seen their terrible baseball. They beat Gonzaga, and it was the most important game in the history of collegiate basketball, as we all know.
They beat Gonzaga after first losing to Gonzaga in a hilarious fashion. And then all of a sudden, they win a game. Good work. Even a broken clock is right two times a day. You know what I'm saying, Jeff? You know what I'm saying? Now, BYU has been awful at football since the 80s. So we're going on 30 years of mediocrity.
Yeah.
Why are we keeping their sports around?
It's funny, because everyone acts like because of the one championship in the 80s under Lavelle Edwards, that we have this phenomenal legacy. I'm going to get roasted for saying anything about this on our,
please,
but it's fine.
Please, I'll support you in this.
But yes, I'm sure we've had some good years with BYU football, to be sure. And we go to some random bowl game that is like a third tier bowl game every year, what have you. But everyone acts
I think
like
they call it now. It's the Las Vegas Burger King meets Chick-fil-A bowl.
It's like people think we're Michigan or OSU or.
No, we think we're that.
That's what I mean by the people. I mean, fans.
No one else in the world thinks that we're.
They act that we are this legacy powerhouse that is storming college football and feared by all.
It's not true.
Now, I'm not saying don't root for your team. I think it's great. You know,
and it's not true. It's not true in football. It's not true in baseball.
Yeah, volleyball were pretty good.
It's not true in basketball.
Volleyball were pretty
good. It's not true in badminton.
What about volleyball?
It's no.
Volleyball were good, and girls soccer were pretty good. And boys soccer were all right, too.
Yeah, that's true. Volleyball we actually are.
Volleyball we are all right. Baseball were terrible. BYU might as well. I don't even know why they have a baseball field at BYU. I don't think there's anyone from BYU who even gets drafted in the major. I mean,
we don't know why they have sports there. Anyway, this is not. So you're taking sports away from all the other schools where the students actually love and appreciate them.
Well,
and leave them at BYU Provo because why?
Let's be careful. The students do love and appreciate the sports in Provo as well, but it does reek of favoritism in a sense because we support them there. Now, we could say that maybe they are money makers, I believe, in many situations for Provo. I don't know if there was a net loss.
Well,
on
this
sports
this
in Hawaii,
thing is the school I know for a fact BYU Hawaii went and said, "What if we can, through personal donations, offset the costs, make sure that we're breaking even?" Couldn't do it.
They don't want to do that though. Doesn't sound like any fun.
No. So anyway, BYU, we renew our message that all church schools need to be abolished.
I'll have to reshare that article. It's been a while. That's an old one now, man. That was
timeless. It's timeless.
Here's a great quick little story. I just love this one here. It's from the Salt Lake Tribune, and it says, "A Mormon temple on Mercedes-Benz Drive, the church seeks to stall such a possibility." Now, this sounds kind of ridiculous, but what's going on here is the church in Atlanta, which is actually up in Sandy Springs, sits on the same street as a Mercedes-Benz dealership, I believe. I don't know if they're right next door to each other or what the situation is, but they're close together. And right now it's on Barfield Road, but the dealership wants to have it renamed Mercedes-Benz Drive, which is great for, you know, all brand identity and promotion and all sorts of stuff. The church, on the other hand, probably understandably doesn't want one of its most sacred houses of worship to have an address of a luxury car company because that might send some mixed messaging.
They say the Mercedes-Benz brand is known for prestige and luxury and class status and all that sort of thing. In the Atlanta, Georgia Temple of the Church, we don't do any of that. It's not what the Atlanta Temple is.
And this is a real effort, too. We've had some people comment on our on our Facebook page and who are in the area, and they're like, no, this is legit. This is like letters to the stakes in the area, people getting involved. They really do not want the street renamed to Mercedes-Benz Drive.
I wonder if the church like had a great plot of land somewhere and was like, oh, we can build on that. What's this road called? And they were like, it's called Volvo Avenue. And they're like, nope, not going to build here.
Though what's funny, I need to find it. I recall somebody commenting on our Facebook page that the they knew of some other church buildings or the temple, like in somewhere in Colorado, was on Coors Avenue or something like that.
No.
Yeah, I'll find it. I'll find it. I'm going to get there. You know how Facebook pages take forever to load a feed.
Let's look right now. Denver Temple.
It might not be Denver. Now I'm stalling. Ah, here we go. Here we go. There's nothing. In Golden, Colorado, the Steak Center is on Coors Street. In Golden, Colorado. Oh, there we go.
The Steak Center. Yeah. Steaks. That's different than the temple, Jeff.
It is different from the temple. You know, at some point, you got to say, what kind of a message does it send and how much do you care? The temple in Los Angeles is on Santa Monica Boulevard. Does that carry a connotation?
No. No, Santa Monica is a delightful place. Lovely town.
The temple in Newport Beach is on like Bison Row. Oh, what's it on? I don't know. Point is, so, it's funny, but I think it's great.
Let me give you another one quick. The church is suing Mormon Leaks.
Well, yeah, sort of.
They're suing them because of copyright infringement. You can't call...
It's not suing. It was a cease and desist. We're familiar with those, Al. We know how they work.
Yes, we are. We are, and the church. The church told them, "You cannot be called Mormon anything, people. Use your heads." I like that Mormon Leaks. They've got to be. There's no good leaks out there. I'm expecting some, different drama, but they're leaking like the PowerPoint from a members of the 70 training about like what to be observant for in. Youth and things like that.
Well, and also this one, they said the main one. This is kind of what took it over the line, though. I think it's less the Mormon name; it's that this was a PowerPoint for the Brethren that talked about issues that drive people away from the church. But the church saw this posted and said, "That's a copyrighted. You're hosting our copyrighted material on your website, which is it's piracy. You're violating our intellectual property rights." And so they said, "Take it down." That's interesting. That's what it took them to go after him. Less the Mormon thing or whatever else, but simply.
I thought it was the name.
I think the name factors in, but you might be just conflating that with other times we've seen the church go after people with Mormon in the name. For some reason, Mormons, plural like us, remains unscathed, and they know who we are, people. Believe you me. Believe you me. So I don't know. But in this case, the church says no. It's just because if you actual letter is up on Doctroid. The letter from the lawyer for the church from Barry V. Taggart and says,
Barry B.
Yeah, and it just says very simply, like, here is the webpage. It contains material not authorized by the IP owner, its agents, or the law. So get rid of it or else, essentially. Interesting way to go about it.
So let me give you another one. Oh, wait.
Oh, I was going to say it's interesting because when it's hosted, that's what they care about. But what about the. Now, there's Mormon Leaks, the website, and there's Mormon Leaks, the YouTube channel. And we talked about a while ago that they were both kind of duking it out for which one gets to be the Mormon Leaks because they share a name even though they're different products.
Wait, is it really? They're not the same thing?
No. And so isn't it interesting that Mormon Leaks on YouTube is sharing church videos internally, but I haven't seen much about that. I mean, maybe those aren't copyrighted. I'm not quite sure what the rule is there, but I find it interesting that sort of stuff of boring meetings of Elder Oaks asking about homosexuals does not merit a response, but hosting a PowerPoint is kind of what sends it over the edge.
I don't know.
What do you know?
Let's see. So there's a... I know several things. There's an article from the Trib about how black students at BYU think that white students don't understand them well, which is true. It's true. It's sort of the nature of a minority group. If they were well understood, It would be a better world for all of us. So people be, I don't like they report ignorant comments and cultural isolation. I think in general, especially Utah culture just needs a little bit of briefing on being sensitive to minority cultures. Very true.
Well, yeah, because I mean, Utah as a whole, the only major minorities are Hispanics, who are about 10% of the population. But it's
Polynesians,
and you know, but it's a pretty white state, so it's understandable for things like that not to be as ingrained in the zeitgeist, so to speak. Black community. There's not a big black community in Utah at all.
Well, and you got to have a little bit of empathy for these sweet farm children that have never even seen a black person until they get to BYU, and then it's like, not a lot of them. There's not, you know, it's hard to, you don't come in natively understanding their culture and like,
and you ask questions because of what Breitbart told you, and you know, I'm gonna resist. That's not to say you're,
hey-o.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's interesting. I had a great conversation this week with a buddy of mine who is transitioning from male to a female.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It was fascinating.
Interesting.
Because this is,
is this person LDS?
No.
Darn it. That'd be no, that would be a compelling interview.
I told him, I'm just so fascinated by this because I haven't had a great understanding of what that struggle is.
Yeah.
Because I haven't had very many conversations with people in that space. And I was like, and I see you, and even in this moment, you're a level-headed, sane, smart, capable person that's going through this transition. And but it's funny because as we're talking, you know, he's sort of articulating to me, he's like, well, so now I'm a woman, and the designation of gender on my driver's license is a female, and the correct pronouns to use with me are she and her. And I'm like, and for me, my casual conversation with people is still like, if I'm talking to a woman, I still say dude, or I don't know, man.
So do I. My wife hates it,
but I don't know, man. I never say, I don't know, woman.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden I'm like hypersensitive to everything coming out of my mouth. And I'm like, hello, sir. How are you?
Say madam, but madam will come off well.
Will the madam have a pretzel? But like it gave me a lot of appreciation for sort of the struggle of a minority group trying. I mean, everything is sort of indicative of their identity as they have these interactions with people. But then for just, I mean, everybody else, like just not even knowing the appropriate, I guess, etiquette for talking to or what to say, what not to say, what's appropriate. It's difficult. So I don't know. Empathy both ways.
It requires sensitivity. And I think oftentimes in an effort to try to be sensitive, sometimes we wind up, you know, asking foolish questions or saying foolish things because we think we're being sensitive, but instead it's easy to wind up being insulting. And you're not trying to be by any means.
You're like, here, let me go. I'm going to go and talk to these people because I, you know, I've got black friends. I know.
Sure, or that. Yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute, buddy. You already screwed it up. You ruined it.
There you go. So it is a good point. I mean, this is the thing you reference here at BYU. It's a good study, and there's stuff worth reading there because it's only natural that I think sometimes we want to understand and be inclusive, but sometimes it's easy to be awkward when you try to go about doing it. Not to anyone's fault.
I think
fault,
a little of it is sort of this weird projected expectation.
All right, Missouri, take it easy there.
Hey, that's what I feel. That's just my view.
And if it's what you feel, it's what's true. That's all that matters now.
Thank you.
It's all that matters. All right. Interesting stuff over the past week. So Elder Oaks spoke at commencement at BYU Hawaii, if I'm not mistaken. Or no, was it just a devotional? Devotional, I'm sorry.
No, it was commencement.
They do commencement in March?
Yep, they have the BYU
Idaho deal.
Every 2 months, somebody's graduating thing.
Well, that's a weird way to do it. So it was commencement. And Elder Oaks was out there, and some of his remarks caught people a bit off guard, especially because it's Elder Oaks, and not to politicize the apostleship, but he's known as kind of one of the more conservative, more, you know, by the book brethren.
Politically savvy.
Yeah, well, he was a lawyer and a judge. But there's a paragraph here, and I'll read it to you, and this is the one that's caught some people by surprise. So he said, quote, "These are challenging times filled with big worries, wars and rumors of wars, possible epidemics of infectious diseases, droughts, floods, and global warming. Seacoast cities, like Laie, are concerned with the rising level of the ocean, which will bring ocean tides to their doorsteps or over their thresholds. Global warming is also affecting agriculture and wildlife. Nations whose prosperity..."
He's describing Waterworld with Kevin Costner.
Great movie. "Nations whose prosperity depends on world peace and free trade worry about disturbing developments that threaten either or both of these. We are even challenged by the politics of conflict and the uncertainties sponsored by the aggressive new presidential administration in the world's most powerful nation." And so it's easy to jump down this and interpret it in a lot of ways, especially to Trump haters and the way you might want it to be interpreted, and some of which I think might be true, might not be. But these are pretty direct remarks from somebody like Elder Oaks about, it's for one thing, he's saying global warming is here.
Yeah. So he said the words.
So that's,
he acknowledged the existence.
That's interesting. I also feel that there's a little bit of a slight at isolationism in a sense. He doesn't decry it, but he says people worry about disturbing developments that threaten their country as it relates to free trade and world peace. And he does describe the new administration as aggressive, but aggressive can mean a lot of things, because you can aggressively pursue great stuff, right? I mean, you could be...
No, that's not what he's saying.
I'm just trying to give it the benefit of the doubt. So that's all I'm saying. But I find that very, very interesting that Elder Oaks... And there's, of course, great context to his entire remarks, but this one paragraph has caught people by surprise that Elder Oaks is kind of going at it.
You should cruise over to the BYU Hawaii website, and you can watch the commencement speech there.
Yeah. In other quick news, Al, did you see all the nonsense over Sister Dalton's remarks over the Women's March?
How first she criticized them, saying they should be more uplifting and virtuous, and people said, "We are being that," and then everyone was like, "You don't know virtue, and you're dumb," and then they're like, "But you are, and I am."
Yeah, I think it was easy to take it beyond where it needed to go. I mean, I don't think Sister Dalton should have been insensitive to the very real concerns of the women who marched, but I also think we're so easy to tear somebody down over it. But that was interesting.
Well, on the one hand, right, it's funny because oftentimes, especially in our culture, we look past the sort of the cause or the need and focus on the one thing that we sort of identify with. So in this case, right, like for her to call out some of the profanity being used by women and saying, "I wouldn't have done that." You get one shot at making remarks about an event, and you can either focus on like the good that they're doing or call out the bad. And she chose to call out the bad for better or worse and say, "You shouldn't be like that." Not necessarily wrong, but like you got a moment to sort of prop people up and say, Look at this great thing you're doing too.
Well, and also we don't know everything. We know that she said she saw it from a cab while going around New York briefly. So we don't know how much she was exposed to,
somebody could have flashed her their boobs.
True. Or even
and
how much she
had to look at some hippie from Maine's hairy nipple area.
Oh boy.
And nobody wants that.
Oh boy. Well, no one's gonna top that.
You don't know what happened.
I won't even go into my Jana Reese comments about profanity, but if you want a great read, go check that out at our website.
Jana said you should be able to swear. I think that's good. Jeff rebutted and said no.
Because Jana's research F-words. Was flawed. She tried to say that the Brethren have said it's a class thing, like making fun of low-class people who swear, when she took it out of context and failed to provide the proper analysis. And she's a PhD. Too shame.
Way to go, Rachel Maddow. let's see, some other quick news. President Monson is not going to be subpoenaed to the Navajo child abuse case.
Following that,
which is good. That man probably shouldn't be trapped.
They said he could still have to do a deposition potentially, but he's not going to be subpoenaed to go anywhere.
Kind of an interesting article on LDS.org around, can you honor God while working on the Sabbath? Which I think is a great question to sort of work through and make sure that you're focusing on, again, focus on the right principles here of worship and Sabbath-day observance and have context to handle that with a modern, you know, if you work in a hospital, you got to work on Sunday.
Other quick news, two major temples going down. One, the church has obviously thrown in the towel on the work in the Bay Area, saying it's done. So let's just close the Oakland Temple down for 2 years next year. But then again, they've also said the same thing to My Blessed Land. And they think we in D.C. are going to travel to Philadelphia or something. But they're closing the D.C. Temple for 2 years starting next year, which is a very long time. They're doing significant work to these buildings, which are old. I mean, it's been there for a while. So it needs some, you know, it needs some love, like any building. But it still sucks.
Interesting. And we also had on our website, our very own Josie Gleave has written a great interview with the author, Mary Campbell, who wrote an article about Charles Ellis Johnson. Oh, yeah. She wrote a book about this guy. It's kind of a cool story about him where he was the official photographer for the church, but was also a hustler. He's the son of this three-wife polygamous family, so there's a lot of kids. Then he ended up having to take care of them. So he's hustling for cash and started shooting erotica back in the 1850s, 1870s-ish. Erotica of, like, traveling women going through town, and then he would sell it out to the world as, like, hey, this is Utah. We're still pretty cool. You should come check us out. So kind of some cool research and great article there. So thank you, Josie.
Yeah, great interview, Josie. So, folks, we're sorry to leave you, but hey, we have time commitments. Life has to go on. Once again, we'll put out the call. If you feel like recording your own episode of This Week in Mormons, we very well may publish it. We're not even joking. If you don't like
We will publish anything. Send us 5 minutes of it. And if you're a band trying to get exposure, send us your demo reel. Maybe
That's legit because we do take an NPR approach to appreciating music. So if you've got music and you want to hear it, we'll play it as the outro music on the show.
All
in
songs
full.
Considered right
in
here.
Full. We'll do
so
it.
So email us contact@thisweekinmormons.com. Please send it all.
Come over to my apartment and give me a tiny desk concert. I would be happy about it. But you can also visit us at Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and join us. We've also got General Conference coming up, Al. I don't know. I guess I think the next time we record, presumably we'll be in the aftermath of General Conference.
No, we got to do a prediction show. It's tradition.
But then we also have a tradition where we go through. I don't know. So we'll have to figure this out. So we'll be back, folks. That's all we're saying. Conference is only a few weeks away. So we'll figure something out.
Oh, shoot. I'll be on my honeymoon through conference.
I don't know what you're talking about, Al.
Of all the times.
All right, folks. We love you a lot. Thanks for taking the time to listen. And we'll catch up with you again soon, okay? Good morrow, Al.
Good day.
Goodbye.
Would you butcher my love to understand it? To know where it lies, cut a hole in my heart, fill a hole in your life. I'm yours to dissect night as every heartbeat burn a white heat in your blood. To be near.